Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, June 30th, 2007. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. I will be the host today, where our topic we have posted is on this matter. That is, we are now looking forward to a post-Cheney world.
Yes.
And cheering with me here in the studio, I'm very glad that we have to discuss this, our co-director of counterintelligence for EIR News Service, Michelle Steinberg. Welcome.
Hi, Marcia. Good to be here. Thanks.
And to see how this has come about and what's ahead, we have from Washington, D.C. and from Seattle, LaRouche Youth Movement leaders in Washington. Welcome, Ian Overton.
Hello.
Good to have you. You've just been come off a week of action, so I'm sure now that Congress just recessed and is going out to their home districts, they're going to get it even more. In Seattle, we welcome Francesca Naimi. Welcome, Francesca.
Hello.
Thanks. And I'd like to just throw in here, before we kick off our discussion, that this is the third week in a row where we've had someone from Seattle. So you never know in history where some location becomes the fulcrum for making history, let's put it that way. And let me be specific about this, is that in the last 2 weeks, Francesca, colleagues of yours were describing the incredible heat that was placed on the congressional delegation from Washington State, especially Representative Jim McDermott, who's right from your city, is he not?
Mm-hmm.
And our listeners should know, if you haven't been watching the LaRouche PAC website day and night, which you should, that Thursday night, on the eve of Congress recessing, this representative gave a speech, I believe, Francesca, on the floor of the House. Do
yes.
you want to? Why don't you say what he said?
Well, a few key things that I remember is that he specifically said that that because of the, or he says, as my constituents back in Washington know, I've struggled mightily with this matter for a long time, because he's been getting a lot of hell from his constituents because of the organizing. And so he addressed that, and he also spoke about this question of fear, I mean this blockage that is keeping a lot of the Congress from acting, and how he's going to get a lot of shit for doing this. I'm sorry, excuse my language, but he's going to get a lot of trouble. He's going to be getting a lot of trouble for going out against the leadership, and that this is necessary in order to save the Constitution. At the end, it was just very, he says, call it a medical condition, call it a political condition, call it what it is, but the department of, or the departure, it's the departure of a person who forgot he worked for the people, for the American people, which that was pretty good.
So I think with that, Representative McDermott becomes the 10th person calling for Dick Cheney's impeachment by specifically signing on to sponsor, is it House Resolution 333 of Representative Kucinich. And Representative Kucinich is going to the Northwest, right, Francesca, tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
He'll be in Portland, Oregon.
Yep.
And so this is just the kickoff to this July 4th congressional recess, and it's good that it's a time to reconsider what patriotism means. So Dick Cheney's in big trouble. And it was a couple years ago that LaRouche called on people, look ahead to the post-Cheney era. And it's taken a while because of this blockage you were talking about of Nancy Pelosi and the leadership of the Democratic Party. It's taken a while for the good old Republicans to stand up and be counted and get rid of some disgrace and danger like Dick Cheney, but it's all happening. So let me ask you right now, we should come back to Seattle so that you can yet again give us an update on what kind of fuss you've been kicking up, Francesca. But before that, Michelle, do you want to describe any, you've been helping to put a bed a third, or I don't even know if it's the fourth installment of what this BAE affair, this mega scandal that's history-making is, and it's directly connected to Cheney. But do you want to say something about that before we hear on Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, I'd like to throw in the view from London. I'm not in London, but I feel like I've been reading the London newspapers all week, because that is the center of the cover-up of the corruption of the bribery of a very, very close friend of Dick Cheney, and who is simultaneously a very, very close friend of the Bush family. And I'm talking here about Prince Bandar bin Sultan, who was the ambassador to the United States for 24 years, beginning in the time of Reagan's presidency through George W. Bush's presidency. Bandar left Washington, D.C., rushed back to the kingdom in late 2005 because he wanted to consolidate power there. And it's my understanding that you can't do that if you're not on the scene. And what Bandar wanted to do was be the national security advisor and have the portfolio for relations between Saudi Arabia, which means the whole Gulf-producing area, relations between the Gulf oil-producing countries with the great powers. So he rushed off there, and what he succeeded in doing, because he's so close to Dick Cheney, was he made the new ambassador, who is a prince like himself, but a higher level prince, if you could say that, Prince Turki bin Faisal. Prince Turki is the son of a former king, which Sultan is not. He's the son of the current crown prince. That's a complicated story. But what Bandar did was basically he erased the position of ambassador in the United States. And the whole time he was back in Saudi Arabia was running secret operations, making secret visits to the United States to meet with Dick Cheney. Meanwhile, Dick Cheney's doing the same thing with arch-maniac fascist in Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and the three of them are, I'm not saying they're meeting together, I wish I could get them placed in the same room planning the Iran war, but through Cheney. He's doing bilaterals with Bandar and bilaterals with Netanyahu to launch war against Iran. And as Mr. LaRouche has said, as Lynn has said repeatedly, you let that genie out of the bottle and we are into a new dark age that nobody can turn around. So this is what, going back to London and what's been going on this week, Bandar, of course, is at the center, as listeners of the LaRouche show heard last week. He's at the center of this investigation into BAE Systems, the fifth largest defense contractor, not in Britain, but in the United States. They send Bradley fighting vehicles into Iraq, and they're bribing all kinds of dirty operatives throughout the world, setting off sectarian and confessional wars in Africa, in the Middle East, all over the place. BAE is dirty, bad news. And don't be surprised if it comes out that some of the insurgents who have been involved in killing Americans in Iraq, killing British soldiers in Iraq, have been getting arms through these networks. After all, Bandar himself boasts that he provided $3 billion to the Muslim Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Who are those guys? Well, people might recognize the name of someone called Osama bin Laden or Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the number one al-Qaeda prisoner, who everybody knows from the 9/11 investigations. So this is what the BAE represents. Now, this week, as Lynn said, last show, which you also did on the BAE and the strategic situation, LaRouche had just completed a webcast, June 21st webcast, and he said that it was his view that somebody in London might punish Dick Cheney for allowing, for not stopping this scandal from coming out. He was a party to it. He benefited from it. It's one of the means that he has used. Dick Cheney has used the BAE Bondar networks to run covert operations around the world that are really illegal under the the various statutes of our government, the National Security Act of 1947, the charters of various intelligence agencies and so forth. He's done what we call an asteroid or off-the-reservation operation, third force operation, to conduct assassinations, coups, wars, and the greatest sabotage of the Republican tradition of the United States in history. So this week, what LaRouche said was going to happen out of London did happen. And what we were looking at, it kind of broke wide out into the open on Thursday, was that the Financial Times of London, which represents a significant faction of the British oligarchy, had a lead editorial supporting a Department of Justice investigation that was opened into the BAE matter. So we were happy, we were very happy to hear that the Justice Department had taken this action. That broke on Wednesday, June 26th, when BAE was forced to file some kind of official paper to the London Stock Exchange. Hey, we're a big company, we're traded on your exchange, and we've just been notified that the Department of Justice is investigating us under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. And that was good news. BAE's stock took a total nosedive. And on top of the organizing activity, particularly Lyndon LaRouche's webcast of June the 21st, and that is posted on the same website that people are listening to us on. Isn't that right, Marcia?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so people can listen to that and see what LaRouche said about BAE and Cheney. That intervention, and particularly the work, the leafleting, the telephone calls, the lobby work that the LaRouche Youth Movement have been doing in Washington, brought about a breakthrough. Let me just finish before we can go right to Ian, if he wants to say anything. Let me just finish with what we found out. Later on Thursday of this week, after the Financial Times was singing the praises of the Justice Department for not covering up this scandal. Why are they saying that? They're only saying it because they know if there's another cover-up, and if Bush tries to cover this up, they're going to lose everything. With Gonzalez being, subpoenas are being delivered to the White House, and there was a debate and a very, very, very close vote to cut off all funds to the Vice President of the United States yesterday. I think it was 214 votes against cutting off funds and 209 votes for cutting off funds. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it was that close. So what happened? Well, somebody who has now established that he has what it takes to be in the presidential running, Senator John Kerry. He's the guy who had started the Justice Department investigation. And he sent a letter to Alberto Gonzalez, Attorney General, on June 21st. And believe me, as a member of the Senate Financial Services Committee, which is responsible for some of for oversight on some of BAE's operations, John Kerry was one of the first people in the Senate to get briefed by us, by LaRouche PAC and the LaRouche Youth Movement, on this BAE scandal. And Kerry is actually well known for years ago for being a top-notch investigator of dirty operations of the secret government in the Iran-Contra scandal. People don't remember the Kerry Committee investigation.
They should look it up,
where he documented the allegations and investigated the allegations of trafficking in cocaine under the cover of national security. Oh, yeah, Kerry did that for 2 years. It's a blockbuster report. But you didn't see any of that, Kerry, in the 2004 campaign. This letter to Gonzalez has that quality, and it puts him in the running as a Democratic presidential pre-candidate. We can come back to his specific points of investigation later, but I'll just read you the opening paragraph. Dear Mr. Attorney General, I am writing to you concerning recent reports that the British defense company BAE Systems may have violated U.S. anti-bribery laws in relation to its international arms deals. According to published reports, Britain's Serious Fraud Office was investigating an $80 billion transaction known as the Al-Yamama Deal, involving a series of illegal payments by BAE through the now-defunct Riggs Bank in Washington to former Saudi ambassador to the U.S. Prince Bandar bin Sultan. That investigation was halted last December by the British Attorney General Lord Goldsmith on the grounds that it was not in the national interest to pursue the inquiry. And it gets better from there. So I'll stop there, and let me also invite, if we can, listeners. You can send us questions by email. That is radio@laRouchePub.com. Am I right on that?
Yes.
That's radio@LARouchePub.com. And we'd love to hear from you. So I think we should see what Washington, D.C. has to tell us about the organizing.
I'll tell you, it's a good thing we still have our Constitution. Because of the freedoms to print and distribute information and news, we've been able to blow the lid on this entire BAE scandal by taking it to the streets and taking it to the Congress and the Senate. In the week before the webcast, when we first published the scandal of the century articles, we've gotten out now over 17,000 copies of this article.
Wow. That's in D.C., right, Ian?
Yeah, that's just in D.C. inside the places where the State Department people go to work in the morning at the Congress. We've been getting up every morning. We had about 80 people here, or maybe about 60 to 80 people here during the week for LaRouche's webcast on the 21st, and so we were organizing up a storm. We were letting everybody know that this was the scandal that's going to make Dick Cheney crap his pants.
He's really very polite.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, it's funny because even some pretty tight-nosed Republican types, they just got to laugh at that because they know that this guy is in it deep. And when we begin to tell them that, you know, this is a $80 billion slush fund, that this is the kind of thing that was going on with Iran-Contra, and this is what's been filling the Middle East with weapons, they begin to see that it's not just a bribery scandal, that it really is the scandal of the century. They begin to see that there is a light at the end of the Cheney-Bush administration. So what we've been doing here is we've actually been targeting specific committees who have the oversight and intervention capability to do things like stop the takeover of Armor Holdings, which is one of our defense companies, which BAE is attempting to buy out, or to intervene against the treaty that Bush signed with Blair just before he left office, which would allow for more of this sort of back-and-forth exchange with private military corporations. And so what we've been doing is kind of as a follow-up to these impeachment packets, which we had about 2 or 3 weeks ago, we've been targeting certain committees that deal with this, and also the progressive caucuses and the caucuses that actually, you know, where you have a lot of democratic discussion about, well, what are we doing? What's our policy? And as we've been doing this, that's where you've actually seen a lot of these people when they're getting the crossfire from in the district and in D.C. when we're telling them about what their constituents are saying, that they start breaking with the popular consensus of the Democratic Party and start signing on to this impeachment bill. So it's really been exciting.
Ian, is it I think it would be useful to describe to our listeners, wasn't it the case that, you know, even 2 weeks ago, when we walked around saying BAE, people would say, what, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
How did we change that? Because it still hasn't been, you know, it's buried in the Washington Post, not a word in the New York Times, it's not on the news.
Well, you have to actually discuss an idea with people. When people only rely on what they're being fed in the mainstream press, and they're not actually, you know, that's very sanitized. We would actually go onto the street, and we would talk to people. We had a chorus there during the week of action, which attracted many, many people, where we were singing canons that kind of brought out some of the ironies of how it's, you know, forget about Osama, it's all your mama. And, you know, really going through with the staffers and the people in the offices, we would walk in there and we say, look, this is the scandal of the century. And even people who we don't necessarily have a, you might say, a friendly relationship with,
right. They
were intrigued. And they say, well, what are you talking about? And so you can just, if you just go through some of the basics that you have, you know, $80 billion of oil money that's not accounted for, what happened to this money? What's going on? And then you put this in some of the larger context. Like LaRouche said when he was talking on Ecuador Radio the other day, that this is the British East India Company.
Mm.
This is what was going on, as Jeff put in his most recent article. This is from the biography of Prince Bandar. This is money that's been used. The Al-Yamama money has been used to fund things like the Mujahideen, which was a London orchestrated. You know, the Cold War was a way of getting the United States to destroy the Truman. To destroy the Roosevelt tradition by going with this, you know, war that didn't have to happen against godless communism. So we would start to bring out some of this history with people and start to discuss with them, well, look, remember where we are in history? Remember what's been going on for the past 100 years or 250 years? And then you bring this up again and you say, well, look at what's happening now. You know, this isn't just a coincidence. There are people who have a real intention to destroy the nation state because they want to have globalization.
I'd like to, if I could, Marcia, just go back to Francesca, because the change that was reflected in McDermott, and obviously what she quoted from him saying, as my constituents know, I really wrestled with this thing. What did it take to make that change from our organizing standpoint, Francesca?
Well, one thing I've been thinking about is that it definitely, like, it helps me to understand what LaRouche means when he talks about this idea of dynamics versus linear action, that, like, what caused this change is not something that you, it's not like a one-to-one kind of thing, but... it's been a process of fighting every single day to destroy the pessimism in Seattle and even in McDermott. Like, at this town hall meeting, if you guys got to see any of the ops reports, but he just kept saying that the Iran war is inevitable, basically, and that there's nothing that we can do, we don't have the votes.
Wow.
On, and just kept repeating, and all the questions were about impeachment because of the kind of culture that we're creating. I guess just a lot of times, the one thing that I don't really think that we realize is such a powerful effect on the population is the singing that we do. Like, I think Ian brought it up, but just how much the people need, they need to see, they need that kind of irony and beauty brought out, because everyone knows that this is a really scary situation, and the main thing is that we've just been constantly trying to hypothesize how to flank the population by bringing out the most funniest skits, trying to figure out, like, we were getting out condoms at this parade because it's every year they have this thing called the Fremont Fair, and it's the wildest thing where you have, like, naked bicyclists and people bringing their kids, and there's, like, thousands of people coming to this event. People come from all over the country to come to this thing, and so we had condoms that had Al Gore brand, like a picture of Dick Cheney on them, that said, I think it said protecting Dick, and on the back it said, will McDermott sign on to Resolution 333, and then both phone numbers of his Washington office and Seattle office, and we got out like at least 500 within the first hour or two, and people were just like, cracking up. We were just trying to figure out, you know, how do we get people to laugh at this insanity? And people were really pissed off when they found out that McDermott said at this town hall meeting that he wasn't going to sign on to the bill. And that really provoked people to call, and people were getting their cell phones out. And I think Will called the office in D.C. because the Seattle office was closed. It was on a Saturday. And the woman who answered was completely frazzled because she said she was getting, like, a record number of calls that day. And then just right after the event, we got on the phones and we were just organizing the hell out of all of our contacts to call in and to really challenge McDermott. And we saw, you know, all the work that we've been doing actually does, you forget that you actually have that power. And it's pretty exciting that we pushed them over the edge.
Oh, that's a great report.
Yeah.
That's a great report. I think Marcia has an announcement right now.
Well, usually we, at halftime, we repeat that this is the LaRue Show. And it's the 30th of June. And we recommend highly you listen, not just listen, it's every week from 3 to 4 Eastern Time in the United States on www.larouchepub.com. And also call in to make sure you're in touch with this and pushing things ahead. There's a toll-free number, 800-929-7566, 800-929-7566. So this is 4th of July week. This is the time to do this kind of action. And I can see that on the eve of the representatives, in this case, Representative McDermott going home, it's a good use of fear. He would be afraid to go home if he had to confront all these calls again.
Yeah, one of his aides actually had to come down from the office after he got pressed by a couple of us on impeachment, just because they were getting so much stuff from so much trouble from the constituents that he had to come down to our table because he knew it was us who was creating this kind of stress for him. He completely broke down and was like, this was just a few days ago. And so, I don't know, I think it's just hilarious how individuals, like, at this town hall meeting, like, brought up ideas, like, Sarah is a good example, who brought up this question of, or this idea of the principle of classical tragedy, and bringing out what will actually happen if we don't impeach Cheney, and just creating this kind of thinking that was necessary for him, the subjectivity that needed to be brought out, and like Kevin bringing out how if he doesn't want to do it, that he'll take his job, and it's just it's really funny.
Oh, that's great. The one thing, Michelle, let me ask you here about, or tell everyone, I understand the next EIR online within a couple days, and the next printed EIR has yet more. You've been part of a task force that's getting out stuff, and one thing is Antonin Chaykin, that many of you have heard and know, has written up, for example, how Dick Cheney in person was co-chair in Britain a few years ago, for example, I think it was maybe year 2000, at a meeting that was how to outsource more out of the military. It might have been a Memorial British East India Company meeting, but it was how to outsource more military functions to private concerns. And so this question of the BAE, this apparatus, black bag, dirty tricks, flush fund, and Dick Cheney literally, and also other characters in Britain. It's just very blatant, it's not secret, but a lot of it's very blatant. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's current history. And we're looking at, I think, Lyndon LaRouche's analogy to this being the same as the British East India Company. People really have to understand that, and as we go into the next few days, you know, I just want everybody to not treat the 4th of July as hot dog day or cherry bomb day or something like that, but really think of Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, the youth movement that George Washington had, like 19-year-old Marquis de Lafayette, 21-year-old Alexander Hamilton. These are the people who put their lives, their fortune, and their sacred honor on the line to make this revolution happen. And I think LaRouche had that very, very much in mind when he wrote a memo this week about, you know, our forces may seem very small, like Gideon's army, but the point about Gideon's army is you do better with an army which is small and has that fire in the belly. How many signers were there on the Declaration in 1776?
I can picture them, but it's not many.
I think it's like 48. And Francesca or Ian, do you remember? I'm embarrassed.
That's right. I think that's about
Where's
right.
Where's Tony? Take him when we need him. 48 signers on the Declaration of Independence. And look what happened. I mean, that's a real Gideon's army. So this idea that we're fighting a latter-day manifestation of the British East India Company is very, very real. And actually what the next EIR is going to have is the leaflet. The mass leaflet which we want every citizen of this country to use on this anniversary of our Declaration of Independence. And what that leaflet is LaRouche to Nancy Pelosi. She's the Speaker of the House. It's one of the most powerful positions in the entire United States. And she's blocking the impeachment of Dick Cheney. What a stupid thing to do. But it's a leaflet, LaRouche to Pelosi, BAE scandal makes the impeachment of Cheney urgent. And so that will be in print in the EIR. We're going to have Anton Chaykin. He's the head of our history desk. He will a full documentary of this dirty network in Britain that are LaRouche's enemies, from financier John Train to Cheney's friends, Baroness Liz Simmons, who was part of the, she was the defense minister for procurement She was a sales agent for BAE, for this dirty operation. And what we've documented Cheney was involved in, he was head of Halliburton in 2000. And he and Baroness Simmons oversaw this conference on the privatization of the military. That is a return to feudalism, but with a fascist tinge. Right? Nowadays, when you go back to feudalism, you have to bring the whole rotten, successions of feudalism. That it's going to be manifest there. So it's going to be feudalism with a Nazi synarchist tinge. And that's they want militaries that are a bunch of video game trained zombies who are mercenaries, not connected to any ideas, any Republican notions. And that's their idea of a new world empire. That's what the Iraq War is about. That's what the Iran War is about. It's 100 years of perpetual war to destroy that nation state, which was born in that Declaration of Independence in 1776. So that's really what our movement represents, and we're going to try and get that across. Now, we also have an interesting case study. One of the figures in the BAE empire is a guy called Bredenkamp, whose offices were raided in October 2006. And he took offense and wrote a letter, demanded that we publish his letter, saying that the charges that EIR made about him being an arms dealer were unfounded, untrue, inflammatory, not based in reality, and so forth. And I'm not going to describe our comments on that. We are publishing the letter because the record is a humdinger, his record. I don't know why he wrote the letter, but the commentary gives us a new window into British operations in Zimbabwe, in supporting the vicious racist apartheid operation of Ian Smith in Rhodesia, which Mr. Bredenkamp, he was the sanctions buster, getting arms into that vicious racist regime. So that's going to be in there. And we've got to keep this campaign going. Of course, Senator John Kerry's call for an investigation is going to be there. I think it's a good time for me to say, what are Kerry's 6 points? He tells Gonzalez, 1, have there ever been any investigations, preliminary or otherwise, of BAE by the Department of Justice? 2, is there an ongoing investigation of BAE by the Department of Justice? 3, if any investigation of BAE was ever initiated by the DOJ and subsequently dropped, what were the specific reasons for this decision? I mean, he's not playing cat and mouse. He's not waiting for their answer to ask the next question. He's going right at it. 4, was the Attorney General's office or any other office or official in the DOJ ever contacted by any other officials, agencies, or departments of the U.S. government, including the White House, concerning this matter? If so, please list any and all such contacts. 5, is the Attorney General's office aware of any past or present investigation of BAE by any other agency or department of the U.S. government? If so, has the Justice Department requested access to information on this investigation? Has the Justice Department requested any information related to BAE from Britain's Serious Fraud Office? Now, there's an obvious question that we don't know the answer to. 6, what contact, if any, has the Attorney General's office had with the Committee on Foreign Investment regarding the sale of Armor Holdings to BAE, which Ian mentioned? So those are some of the highlights related to this. So are we in the post-Cheney era? A lot of that depends on us, and I think we should pursue that question.
Right. Ian, let me ask you about that, unless you have another point. You said part of what the week of action and the general work is in enlisting people on understanding what's going on is seeing that war avoidance means they should start to grasp some economics and the need for restoring projects again and infrastructure. Is that what you would say?
Oh, absolutely. Probably the most important concept in economics is the epistemological question of the difference between man and beast and how human beings have this ability, as LaRouche mentioned in a recent paper called The Rules for Survival, is this question of immortality and living out immortality while you're still alive rather than waiting for immortality after you're dead. Because I bring this up first simply because people generally don't find the cause or the passion or the reason for building the needed infrastructure and agro-industrial mega projects, such as a tunnel across the Bering Strait from Russia to Alaska, unless they have this sense of living immortality, of actually participating in the lives of people who will be born after you die. And I think this is starting to come a little bit clearer to people, and I think that might be why they're signing on with the impeachment bill and why they're moving forward in this way. Because they're realizing that this BAE scandal represents a long, it's becoming, we have to work with some people. It takes a little bit longer with some, especially if they are elected, but what you're facing is a threat of war that is being engineered. And the only real way to avoid that is by working with people in other countries. So you have a nation-to-nation multipolar world that's focused on this kind of development, this kind of development of humanity for humanity's sake.
Now, let me ask either one of you or both. You had a discussion with Lyndon LaRouche last Saturday. Ian, you were directly involved, right?
Yeah.
After the week of, at the kind of roundup of the week of action and looking what's ahead. And Francesca might have been connected in. But this is the same. What you're describing is something that he also focused on, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, people today rely on a kind of groupthink where they look around themselves and they say, well, okay, these people and those people and these people on my committee or in my caucus, they all say we don't have the votes, so we can't do this or that sort of thing. There's this dissonance between their senses, where they see and they hear people doing one thing, and their mind and their soul, which says, well, okay, we have to deal with this problem. And this is one of the key ways that people can begin to actually recreate discoveries in science, in this this trunk line of science that we're working on in the basement, by looking at the paradoxes that come from the different things you get from your different senses, and actually forming hypotheses into, well, what is the cause of these paradoxes? Let me try to investigate what sort of principles are causing that which I'm experiencing with my senses, rather than simply taking the senses as the self-evident truth, which is some of the problem that the Congress and the population has.
Well, you have an intense situation. I think you've described before, not on the air, where there's been meetings. One thing is you have the global warming hoax operation to completely mess up Congress, right? You've had British operatives come over here from their government saying you have to capture carbon, you have to do this and that. And yet you've had the experience that some scientists tell you privately they don't believe in it, but they're still going to go along. Is that was that an exaggeration?
Not really. I think to be more specific is, well, these a lot of these scientists that I've spoken with they love talking about how global warming isn't caused by man, because I mean there's all this all the different lies that are coming in out of the IPCC or Al Gore's movie or David Suzuki or some of these folks. They have all kinds of things. The ocean level is going to rise. All this stuff that's just nonsense. And the scientists, their shortcoming is they don't want to talk about the political side of what they're doing. They say, well, the IPCC is out to get me, or the consensus is out to get me. And I say, yeah, it's a political operation. And they say, I know. And they say, okay, well, let's talk about the politics. And they say, no, I can't be political, because then people will come out and get me.
They're going to get me.
Yeah. So there's the problem is that there's a disconnect between thinking of science and thinking of politics as if they're somehow separate. This is this like this two cultures paradox. This is a British problem that came into science along with some of these the development of modern empiricism and reductionism, and the things that people like Bertrand Russell were doing, and some of the people who were forerunners of him. And so some of the people, they don't see that being a human being means that you participate in the development of what's happening in the universe by being a classical humanistic scientist, and that those things aren't separate from protecting your right to do so through the formation of just laws and the stimulation of creativity. You have to protect those. You have to have a way of protecting those, and we've created a republic in which we can do that. But people today don't remember this stuff. They need to remember it or rediscover it.
Right. Well, I can't help but ask, Francesca, with all of this going on in your region, in the Northwest, what are you going to be up to in the next couple weeks now?
Well, we're definitely on a recruitment drive. We've had a large number of potential new contacts coming in who are just totally excited about the music, the science, the politics, everything that we're doing. It's just exciting to be around us. It's fun to actually be political and in reality. And what else, like, would you want to do with your summer than, save the country and impeach Cheney? And this is, what we're doing is just making it a culture in the office, that there's always, there's always contacts coming in and being, just the other night we had these two contacts who were like, oh my God, I can't stop thinking about you guys when I'm not here, and like they just they can't believe how beautiful the singing is and that they can actually sing too. And it's just, I don't know, it's amazing what LaRouche's idea of actually having us on these kind of science driver projects, how it just pulls young people in like a magnet to like wanting to be creative. It's just our nature. And so I guess what we're really focusing on is recruiting a ton of young people this summer.
Could you say a little bit more about the science work out there? I know a group of the LIM, some of whom were from Seattle and are either in the basement now in the project that LaRouche describes as the basement, started the online magazine Dunamis. Mm-hmm. And so tell us more about the science and the music as you do it out there.
Well, we have people like Will Madursky, who was in the first basement crew. We have Tarana and Peter, who are down there right now, as well as Michael Kirsch, who I think he was recruited in Seattle. I mean, I guess we have, people like Rihanna, who is in the Harmony of the Worlds, which was the second Kepler project, who's been, when she was here, giving a number of classes and just provoking young people. The culture we've created now is just getting through the new astronomy, where we're just pulling people in, no matter, you know, where we're at. Right now, most of us are working through part three of the new astronomy, and it's just a lot of fun. And people who are brand new to our movement are just coming in and diving in and getting totally inspired to actually be able to know, or to actually have some kind of context for all of the math they've been taught, or, you know, the way that they've been brainwashed at school, and actually see that there is actually a history and a method for figuring out these questions that that mankind has had to figure out. And this, I guess the leadership is key that we have. Is we have just a number of, we have people like Spencer who are leading up the music work. He's been working with Briano in Boston. He was working with, I forgot his name.
Our maestro, John Sigerson?
Yeah, John Sigerson.
Okay.
And so he's just been trying to experiment with us and just drive, push all of us past the kind of barriers that we've been having, and just creating all these breakthroughs for almost every single person. And it's just totally, it's exciting to see the kind of development that we have going on, and the potential that we have for recruitment. It's it's just a matter of I guess the fact that we have great leadership out here to look to help us.
Well, one thing with everything you've described there, Francesca, and Ian in Washington, Michelle, let me throw up to you what someone said. It was your husband in a briefing to the staff today, that in some ways, what's been done in this process of exposing and the whole nature of BAE, the Dick Cheney for several years you've been in on the Children of Satan, you know, the whole, everything that LaRouche initiated. We've created a situation where in the last 10 days, you're seeing certain forces centered in the old synarchy oligarchy in Britain trying to run to keep up, to do damage control. We had the Washington Post do a series they had in the icebox about Dick Cheney. Four days in a row, several pages in the Washington Post. The New York Times, we understand, might be scrambling to do something. So it's a big dynamic here, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a great... Sometimes you have to look at you have to look backwards at a long period of time to see any change. But what Francesca said about dynamics versus linear projection. Again, today's June 30th, right? And LaRouche's webcast was June 21st. So that's, you know, 9 days, 10 days if you count the current day that we're in, which isn't over yet. And the world has completely changed. And I've worked with Mr. LaRouche since I was, fresh out of college. We founded the EIR. Marcia and I were in the, the ground level of intelligence when there was no Executive Intelligence Review. We didn't have a weekly magazine. We didn't have a news service and so forth. And we created that. And now we have a tremendous record, LaRouche's record, really. And we know that this process is moving very, very quickly. But out of all of the things that happen in a given week in the world, LaRouche really recognized that this BAE was a singularity. While people were running around saying, oh, we need to, you know, another resolution against the Iraq war, stop the surge, or somebody else is saying, no, we've got to take on immigration issues or something like that. You know, Lynn, being 85 years old, has an ability to really look at the landscape historically, plus all the history he carries in his head, 3,000 years of history. And he has a real knack, a genius's knack for seeing what are the unique events that are going to mean something? So he recognized this BAE scandal because it's at the heart of all of the reasons that we went into this no-win war, perpetual war, to destroy civilization, which is what the Iraq War is, not just their civilization, our civilization. It is our country. You know, I said this at a forum with Colin Powell's deputy, Colonel Larry Wilkerson. And I said, you know, everybody is quoting George Tenet's expression of slam dunk, but I want to quote Powell's Pottery Barn rule, where he allegedly told President Bush, hey, you're going into Iraq. Remember the rule. If you break it, you own it. But it's not Iraq that's been broken. I mean, that was in many ways already broken, from Sykes-Picot through a century of war, etc. What's been really broken is the United States, which is something that Lynn anticipated even in January 2001, when Scalia of the Supreme Court canceled out the election and imposed George Bush as the president. LaRue said, uh-oh, we're looking at the circumstances just like the Reichstag fire that turned a very, very weak Hitler prime ministership into a fascist juggernaut. So what Lynn saw was that the BAE represented that type of potential. And as an individual historic figure, because, you know, the world doesn't run on groupthink. You may think that you're with the crowd if you've got the popular opinion groupthink. But the real way that change occurs is that some creative mind, and in this case, it's LaRouche's creative mind that said, we're going to get Cheney with this BAE. We don't know all the facts yet, but I know this beast. And this is going to come out. And if we focus on this, we're going to change history. So a week ago Thursday, he held a webcast which was called The Biggest Loose End. Everybody's saying, what's he talking about? What loose end?
I was talking about Cheney.
Yeah, Cheney's loose end. Right. But then it turned out that the BAE was also a loose end. And if you grab those loose ends, you get to where we're at. So on Monday, it was startling to see the Washington Post begin a four-part series that really identified, I don't think they used the F word, as we call it, fascist. But between the lines, this was a fascist who has taken over the government. And it's as we're driving the impeachment situation. So in that sense, we can't let this recess lose momentum. The people out in the field, in the districts like Francesca in Seattle, all 50 states, put the heat on your congressman. Put your congressman's telephone number on the back of free condoms and tell him to impeach Cheney. That's House Resolution 333. I think we got 1.5 minutes, so I think Ian and Francesca should wrap it up.
Go ahead, Ian.
I would just say that, given the, I guess you could say, existential crisis this nation's facing, really, I don't see what could be more exciting than taking part in history and changing it. So yeah, come on over to our offices and study some science, figure out how you can sing and be a revolutionary.
Right, and everyone is in a home district of someone in Congress, so you can put
even those who live in D.C. They have a congressman.
Yeah, right.
Francesca, you wanna say have the final word.
Well, we had an idea for the July 4th barbecue that you're going to be having. Make sure that impeachment is on the table.
On the grill. Cheney's on the grill.
Cheney's on the grill and impeachment's on the table. Good.
Yeah.
It's the menu.
Yep, it's on there.
And Ian, what are you going to do with those? How many do you have left of the scandal of the century?
We got about another 17,000 of them, and we're going to be hitting up. We've been doing early morning deployments all week, and we're going to keep doing specific targeted deployments to State Department places and the relevant folks. We've been personally handing them to the relevant senators and congressmen on these committees.
Okay, that's great. It's hard to believe that our time is now past. So I want to thank Michelle, Francesca, Ian, and call upon all of you to listen to the post July 4th LaRouche show, and that will be July 7th from 3 to 4 in the afternoon Eastern Time. And this is the LaRouche show closing out for June 30th. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you all very much.
Thanks.
Oh, this is fun.